ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय They say when you get a realization, you should immediately share it. I've just realized why Krishna is God. Because he can wear a garland that weighs 5 pounds around his neck all day long. These are amazing garlands that we offer to the Lord. And so we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 14, text today are 24, 25, and 26. I'll chant the Sanskrit and on 24, 25, and then we'll chant it collectively on 26.
Vagadgada dravate yasya chintam rutyatya bhikshanam hasyatika vascha vilajya hudgayati nityate cha mad bhakti yuto bhavanam kudanti yatagnino hima malam jahati matam punasvam bhajate charupam Atma chakamanushayam vidyuya madbhakta yogena bhajatyatumham. And we'll chant 26 here. Yata.
Yata.
Yatatma.
Yatatma.
Pri. Pari mrijate. Aso. Mat. Puna. Ngata. Shravanabhidhanai Tata Tata Pasyati Vashtu Shukshman Chakshur Yathaivanjana Samprayuktam Yathayatatma Parimrijatesho Mat punya gata sa shravanadi danai. Tata tata pasyati vashtu shukshman. Chakshurya taivan jana samprayuktam. Yata yatatma parimrijate so mat punyagatam shravanadi danai tata tata pasyati vastu suksmam Chakshurya taivajana samprayuktam. Please chant.
Gurukula. Yata yata. As much as Atma, the spirit soul, the conscious entity. Parimrijate is cleansed of material contamination. So, he. Matpunyagata. The pious narrations of my glories. Shravana. By hearing. Abhi Danai. And by chanting. Tata Tata. Exactly in that proportion. Pasyati. He sees. Vastu. The absolute truth. Shukshman. Subtle. Being non-material. Chakshu. The eye. Yata. Just as. Eva. Certainly. Anjana. With medical ointment. Samprayuktam. Treated. Translation. When a diseased eye is treated with medicinal ointment, it gradually recovers its power to see. Similarly, as a conscious living entity cleanses himself of material contamination by hearing and chanting the pious narrations of my glories, he regains his ability to see me, the absolute truth, in my subtle spiritual form. Please repeat. When a diseased eye is treated with medicinal ointment, it gradually recovers its power to see. Similarly, as a conscious living entity cleanses himself of material contamination by hearing and chanting the pious narrations of my glories, he regains his ability to see me, the absolute truth, in my subtle form. Purport. The Lord is called Shukshman because he is pure spiritual consciousness without any tinge of material energy. If one chants and hears the holy name and glories of the Lord with great sincerity, there is immediately a transcendental effect. We can immediately see the spiritual world and pastimes of the Lord if we fully surrender to the process mentioned here. A blind person feels perpetual gratitude to a doctor who restores his sight. Similarly, we sing Chakshu Dandiloje Janme Janme Prabhuse. The bona fide spiritual master, the representative of Lord Krishna, restores our spiritual sight, and thus he is our eternal Lord and Master. And the two verses I forgot to read before this. A devotee whose speech is sometimes choked up, whose heart melts, who cries continually and sometimes laughs, who feels ashamed and cries out loudly and then dances. A devotee thus fixed in loving service to me purifies the entire universe. Vad gad gada refers to a highly emotional state in which the throat is choked up and one cannot express oneself. Vilajna indicates that a devotee sometimes feels embarrassment due to bodily functions and memories of past sinful activities. In this condition, a devotee loudly cries out the holy name of Krishna and sometimes dances in ecstasy. As stated here, such a devotee purifies the three worlds. By melting of the heart, one becomes very steady in spiritual life. Normally, one whose heart easily melts is thought to be unsteady. But because Lord Krishna is the stable foundation of all existence, one whose heart melts in love of Krishna becomes most stable and cannot be disturbed by opposing arguments, bodily suffering, mental problems, supernatural disasters, are the interference of envious persons. Because such a person is fixed in loving service to the Lord, he becomes the very heart of the personality of Godhead. Verse 25. Just as gold, when smelted in fire, gives up its impurities and returns to its pure, brilliant state, similarly, the spirit soul absorbed in the fire of bhakti yoga is purified of all contamination caused by previous fruitive activities and returns to its original position of serving me in the spiritual world. Purport. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, this verse indicates that the devotee goes back to home, back to Godhead, and there worships Lord Krishna in his original spiritual body, which is compared to the original pure form of smelted gold. Gold, alloyed with inferior materials, cannot be purified with soap and water. Similarly, the heart's impurities cannot be removed by superficial process. Only the fire of love of Godhead can cleanse one's soul and send one back to home, back to Godhead, to engage in the eternal loving service of the Lord. Om Gyana Tamaranda Sya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unnalitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guru Denamaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Guru Denitanino Vancha Kalpaturabhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vahevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. These three verses, with their all those short purports, have just an amazing amount of information that we can use to look at our process of developing and purifying ourselves in Krishna consciousness. The descriptions given run the full gamut of our advancement, if you will, of what we hope and desire for our advancement in devotional service. Now, this first verse here, text 24, if we took this out of the context of the Srimad Bhagavatam and out of the context of devotional service and described somebody acting like this, we would pretty much chalk them off as being, oh, how shall we politely say, crazy. And yet this is exactly how Lord Chaitanya presented himself, that he'd become crazy by the mantra given by his spiritual master, that he had lost all concern of social behavior, choked up, heart melts, cries continually, sometimes laughs, sometimes dances, feels ashamed, the whole range of emotional feelings here, calling out loudly. These are all activities that a person settled in mundane life works very hard not to exhibit. Of course, when I lived in New York City, all of these symptoms were exhibited by so many different people, sometimes all of them in once, and no love of God was there. So big cities sometimes. I remember actually the very first time I saw something like this here in Alachua was many, many years ago. There's a man wandering across the intersection at 235 and 441. In the middle of the traffic, just carrying on this conversation with himself. And I thought, oh, why don't we see that in New York? But here we see that these symptoms, when they are coupled with the purifying process of devotional service, are considered to be the highest level of devotional ecstasies. The Vagada, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the description of Lord Chaitanya's choking up, gada, that voice like that, not being able to speak. This is one of the symptoms here that we're describing, is one who becomes incapable of expressing themselves due to the feeling of devotional ecstasy. And then at the same time becoming embarrassed by those manifestations. An actual devotee is not eager nor interested in displaying their high level of devotional advancement by showing these different devotional ecstasies. In the short time we had Srila Prabhupada physically with us, you could maybe count on one hand the number of times he publicly showed any type of devotional ecstasies. Whereas we have so many imitation gurus and spiritual masters that make a complete show of exhibiting, rolling on the floor, falling off the Vyasasana and rolling on the floor, hardly able to call it a Vyasasana in their cases. But this is the difference between the humility of a pure devotee and one who is a pseudo-Vaishnava. Is these symptoms manifest by dint of their execution of devotional service, but they have no interest in displaying them. But when one gets to the highest level of devotional service, sometimes one cannot restrain from displaying these symptoms, as we saw sometimes with Srila Prabhupada. A devotee loudly cries out the holy name of the Lord and sometimes dances in ecstasy. I think this sentence describes the kirtan we just had here. I stepped into the temple room and I was like, wow, there's ecstasy just pouring out of every door here. Even the windows are tilted, and so the ecstasy was flowing up to the top of the ceiling and flowing right out the windows. If you had spiritual eyes, you could have actually seen the waves of ecstasy flowing right out of this room. Wonderful. Kirtan. Somebody want to get that? It might be ecstasy calling. Could you shut that off, please, Pearl? I don't know whose it is, but as they say in the airport, silence your phone before... Anyway, so the if one has actual spiritual vision, one can see this ecstasy manifest itself. So, you know, that ecstasy was floating all around the temple room. The children were also very happy to chant and dance. And, you know, this is what devotional service is about in the age of Kali Yuga. This is what Lord Chaitanya experienced when he began to take up the service to his spiritual master and engage in the chanting of the holy name, and this is what he came to spread. This is Lord Chaitanya's exact purpose, to give us all this opportunity to see the manifestation of chanting and dancing in ecstasy like this. And what is the character of such a devotee? Such a devotee purifies the three worlds. Now, we typically think, of course, of our beloved Srila Prabhupada, that how he purified all the three worlds by his presence here. The fact of the matter is that even less advanced devotees, when they're manifesting this wonder of chanting the holy name and dancing in ecstasy, can purify the three worlds. This is the potency of the holy name, that wherever it manifests, whomever it manifests in, the purifying factor comes with it. Now, purification is something that is essential in our spiritual life. This next paragraph in this verse talks about the melting of the heart. By melting of the heart, one becomes very steady in spiritual life. This can only take a place when there's purification. Now, as I look around the temple room, I'm going to say four-fifths of the personality sitting in this temple have no need to worry about purification. They have not committed sinful activity in this lifetime. If you are all very fortunate, you will not commit sinful activity in this lifetime. But then there's the other group of us that have, as they say, are a little longer in the tooth and have been around for a bit and have come from a different background than all of you young people. So sinful activity is there. The history of it is there in our background. Therefore, the immediate level of purification is required. Not that the children in our assembly here don't need purification, because after all, we're here in the material world. You're all little demigods. All we have to do is ask your mother and father, and they'll confirm that. But nonetheless, you're demigods that have taken your birth here in this world, so therefore that means there's some type of karmic package that has brought us here that needs purification. Therefore, the process of chanting, the process of dancing is extended to everyone. This is not something that's, okay, if you've been around for a certain number of years, you can chant and dance. Only if you've got X amount of expertise can you stand at the microphone and lead the kirtan. These devotees who are putting the microphone in front of so many of you, and you were just chanting so nicely, you know? So this process of chanting and dancing is for everyone, man, woman, old, young. It doesn't matter what our background is. If we're here in this material world, there is some degree of purification required. Just like when you're going to the school, I look around, you're all required to wear a uniform. We don't have any t-shirts with band logos and short skirts and, you know, bobby socks and whatever all this stuff is. Nice uniform, everybody can concentrate on their education. This is required. Similarly, if you're in this material world, it is required that you have to purify yourself. And what is that process of purification? Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalo, Kalua Nasteva. Nobody knows that verse? Let me hear. Kalua Nasteva, 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 Gatya, Anita. You all know that. Do all the kids know that verse? Let me hear it. Harinama, Harinama. If you don't know that verse, it means you haven't been to enough of Madhava's kirtans. You chant that verse at the end of every kirtan. So by this process of hearing and chanting, one gets their heart melted. Now, generally speaking, as it mentions here in this purport, that if one's heart melts, as they say, if one's very soft-hearted, it produces a certain amount of instability, materially speaking. But here again, we see just the opposite, that that melted heart becomes suitable for Krishna to enter in. Our heart, conditioned by material life, becomes very hard, like a rock. And it's very difficult. If you take a rock and you try to poke your finger in it, what's going to happen? Who can tell me? Karanga? You're going to hurt your finger. But if I take a big handful of butter, what will happen if I put my finger in it? Yes. It'll go right inside. So we have to make our heart like soft butter so that Krishna can go inside of our heart. And when he seats himself in our heart, then we become very, very serious about devotional service. One whose heart melts in love for Krishna becomes very stable. And this is the important point. I want you to listen to this. Cannot be disturbed by. Everyone in this world is disturbed by something. We're always feeling disturbance. But here, once we let our heart become melted due to chanting, and once we allow Krishna to enter into that heart, we cannot be disturbed by opposing arguments. That means those people that don't think devotional service is going to benefit us. By bodily suffering. Oh, I hurt my finger trying to shove it into that rock. Yeah. By mental problems. Is there anybody here that doesn't have mental problems? We've all got some mental anxiety. I've got a math test coming up in the third quarter, and I know I'm not going to make it. I've got the bills due at the end of the month. I know I don't have the money. All these are mental anxieties. Supernatural disasters, hurricanes, earthquakes, tornadoes. We just recently had that big, huge hurricane that came through, a supernatural disaster. Did it disturb any of us? No, because we're fixed in devotional service, even if we had to go 10 days with no electricity and light and water. Or the interference of envious persons. Now, those of you that are very young are not so accustomed to this concept. But there is a certain element of society that is very envious of persons who are happy. And they will do everything they can to destroy that. This is the purpose of creating the internet, I think. So, because a devotee is fixed in loving service to the Lord, he becomes the very heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How is that possible? Krishna is God. How is it that he becomes, that the devotee becomes the heart of the Lord? Because the Lord is very, very pleased by those persons who make an endeavor to serve him. And by serving him, the Lord gives his mercy to that devotee. And when that devotee receives mercy, he then wants to give that service back to the Lord even more. And then the Lord receives that and wants to give more mercy to that devotee. And then that devotee wants to give more service back to the Lord. And then the Lord receives, and back and forth like this. It's ever increasing. This is the nature of the spiritual energy. Mundane energy means it can increase to a certain point and stop. Spiritual energy means that it's never ending. The mercy that Krishna gives, the service the devotee gives, are always growing, always increasing. Now, the second verse here is our Pran Govinda here. I was thinking of him as I read this verse because everybody knows, of course, he's a jeweler. And jewelers deal with gold. And when you have gold, you have to purify it. There's different carats of gold, not carat like chomping carat, but it's a terminology for measuring. And it the more pure the gold is, the softer the gold is. And the more mixed it is, the less malleable it is. So when you have gold that has other metals in it, say like maybe it has a little brass or it has some silver, maybe a bit of copper, you want to remove that so you get the pure gold. So the process of doing that is a smelting fire. A very, very, very hot, hot fire. Too hot to even go near. If you put your hand close to it, it'll immediately blister and burn. So the function of this fire is you put the gold in there, and the gold melts and separates itself from the impurities. Now, this is a very interesting concept, because that's what we want to do in this world, is separate ourselves from the impurities of the material world. And how do we do that? By putting ourselves in the fire of devotional service. I think that word is actually used right here. Only by the fire of love of Godhead can one cleanse the soul. Just as that gold, it doesn't matter if you take that you take that lower quality of gold, say 12 carat, nobody will touch 12 carat gold. 14 carat, okay, Americans think 14 carat's really, really good. 18 carat, okay, maybe, you know, 18 carat's kind of prominent in Europe. 24 carat, that's the purest gold. So if you've got some 12 or 14 carat gold and you want to get the 24 carat gold out of it, you have to heat it up so that those impurities go away. We are pure spirit soul by nature. We've come to this material world, and in this material world, we have become influenced with so many impurities. And those impurities affect our consciousness, and those impurities collect within our heart. So how do we get rid of them? By a fire. Does that mean we literally take ourselves and put ourselves into the fire? No, because that process will simply destroy the body without purifying the subtle nature of our existence. But by the fire of devotional service, just as it's hard to understand, I take this piece of gold and put it into the fire. How is it that nothing evaporates, but the impurities separate from the pure gold? In the same way, when we put ourselves in the fire of devotional service, we find that the impurities in our life will become separated and become very clear. And then when you see the impurities, you can remove them, right? If you're trying to do some particular activity and some impure motive is there, it will influence the way that activity turns out. So by removing that impurity, that enviousness, that jealousy, removing that, then the pure devotional service can be there. So this is the importance of keeping in the fire of devotional service. The fire of devotional service. This is a nice phrase. What is that main ingredient of the fire? Hearing and chanting. Hearing, chanting, and then when we hear and chant, what do? We engage. Hearing and chanting gives us the ability to now engage ourselves in devotional service. By that process of engaging in devotional service, that fire stays turned up. If you've got a fire, whether you're doing it for purifying the gold or just on the stove at home, and you turn that fire down, let's say you're going to put a kettle of water for tea. So you put the kettle on, you turn the fire up very high, right? Now, the kettle I have at home, it has a little top on it with a hole, and when it gets completely hot and it starts bubbling, well, sounds better than I do, but it's got a nice little whistle to it. You know, oh, okay, the tea's ready. So turn the tea off. Once you turn that fire down, the heating process, the boiling process is removed. And if you leave it there long enough like that, it's just lukewarm water again, then you got to turn it back up to get that hot water for tea. In the same way, when we're engaged in the fire of devotional service, if we turn that fire down by not engaging in service, right, by not hearing and chanting, then those impurities become prominent again. So this is the point of this verse. By keeping ourselves in the fire of devotional service, heart's impurities are removed. They cannot be removed by a superficial process. Now, in the purport, they're talking about the gold, the superficial process, just washing gold with soap and water. Right, that doesn't separate the copper and silver or whatever's there. Neither does the process of meditation, or the process of pious social activities, or the process of just being a good person remove the impurities in the heart. Instead, we have to engage in the process of bhakti yoga, of pure devotional service. Because by contacting the pure, we can get the influence of that. Thus, the first principle is hearing and chanting. Now in this third verse, actually this third verse, text number 26, really came close to home for me because this is a point that I've spent the last month speaking about while I was in Vrindavan. When the diseased eye is treated with a medicinal ointment, it gradually recovers its power to see. Similarly, a conscious living entity cleanses himself of material contamination by hearing and chanting the pious narrations of my glories and regains his ability to see me, the absolute truth, in my subtle spiritual form. In Vrindavan, at the current time, one might be hard-pressed to appreciate the Vrindavan we read in the books, with grass everywhere that has multiple types of flowers growing out of it, with beautiful bowering trees that give shade, that give fruits and have flowers in them. Actually, in 1932, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati did his Braj Mandala Parikram. And it said that at that time, to walk from Vrindavan to Govardhan, one would not even see the ray of light from the sun coming through the canopy of trees. Now, if you drive from Vrindavan to Govardhan, you can try and count the trees on your hand. So, and then of course there are other factors. It is a very common sight now in the greater area of Vrindavan to see 15, 20 story skyscrapers. Not one, not two, but dozens of them. They're everywhere, all over the skyline. This infrastructure in Vrindavan is not built to accommodate this. So as a result, the proper removal of waste and sewage and things of this nature is not so clear. As a result of this, the Jamuna is not so clear. So all of these things, when one goes there, one looks around and thinks, I don't think this is Vrindavan. Actually, it is. What's not Vrindavan is this, our ability to see. Thus we have the verse, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena. Many devotees would ask me this in my classes in Vrindavan. How do we see Vrindavan? We only see Vrindavan if we purify our eyes by the process of hearing and chanting. The mundane Vrindavan that we see when we look around is not the Vrindavan that exists in Shastra. It's not the Vrindavan of the spiritual platform. It still has the potency, but our ability to appreciate that will depend upon, here again, our level of purification as it comes about from the process of hearing and chanting. So in order to properly understand Vrindavan, in order to properly see Vrindavan and appreciate it in its pure spiritual nature, we have to continually engage ourselves in hearing and chanting. This is why on our particular group, when we would go on parikrams every day, we had 400 devotees we took out on parikram every day. 350, 400, it varied day to day. If we had to go somewhere in the buses, it would be 10 busloads of people. And we would get to the place, what's the first thing we did? Kirtan. We'd have kirtan, then we'd have a class, then we'd have more kirtan. We stuck a little prasadam in there at one point, but kirtan, class, and more kirtan. This process of hearing and chanting, actively hearing and chanting, kirtan means you're actively involved. So this process of hearing and chanting is what purifies the heart so that the vision becomes purified enough to see Vrindavan in its true spiritual nature. If you make a list of tourist sites that people want to go to around the world for having a good vacation, Vrindavan's probably not the top of it. It's not this pristine white beach kind of place that people hanker for. But it has something that they don't have at these other places, and that is the pure spiritual energy of Krishna consciousness. So when we go there, we have to purify ourselves to be able to understand that presence and get the benefit of it. If I go to Vrindavan and all I see is the destruction of the sanctity of Vrindavan, all I see is the impurities all around me, all I see is the unpleasantness of some of the residents, then that means that I have not purified myself. Srila Prabhupada was fond to say, you can't buy a ticket to Vrindavan. Now one might say, well, no, excuse me, you can. All I do is just go on Google, type in, you know, Delta or United or Emirates or whatever airline I want, give my credit card, boom, there's my ticket to Vrindavan. Okay, you may physically put yourself in Vrindavan. But what will be your level of being able to see Vrindavan. This will only come about by your level of hearing and chanting. So if you have a trip planned to Vrindavan, you have to prepare yourself. Oh, you're going to have to get my shots and, you know, be sure I take all the proper medicines and pack what I need. No, that's not preparing yourself. Preparing yourself means to engage yourself in hearing and chanting. And then while there, many devotees will say to me, Prabhu, I'm going to be able to stay after the Kartik Vrata is finished. What should I do while I'm in Vrindavan? I would give one answer. Find some service. The Dham is not a place for vacation. Yeah, just go there and hang out, get up in the morning, have a little something to eat, wander around and, you know, maybe see this temple or that temple and, you know, then, you know, go to bed at night and, you know, no, you have to have some service if you plan to stay in the Dham. Srimati Radhika does not allow people to stay there. They're not serious about serving. So find some service. So this is the way you allow yourself to properly see what is Vrindavan. By hearing and chanting, by purifying our vision, by melting the heart, and by engaging in service. These activities will give that experience in Vrindavan that you'll come back completely refreshed by. Srila Prabhupada wanted that the devotees should go to the Dham every year. Mayapur Vrindavan. This was his instruction. Everyone should go every year. Of course, at the time, the management in various temples and GBC members became very concerned. This would be, you know, pretty difficult. But no, it must be done. Because by this experience, devotees can purify themselves and then go back to their preaching field and stay strong for the entire year until they come again. Do it all over. So I'm not advocating everybody just, you know, get a ticket tomorrow and leave and go to Vrindavan, although that's kind of nice to do if you can. But the point is that when you do get the opportunity to go to the Dham, you have to keep in mind this isn't a vacation. This is a process of purification and advancement. And by hearing and chanting, by this process of putting the salve of devotional service on our eye, we'll be able to see things. Now, having said all that, there are some places in Vrindavan that are still very, very much in the mood of old Vrindavan. There's two places that are close to each other. When you're going on the Parikram path around Vrindavan and you get to the area where the Krishna Balaram tree used to stand, which is now about to be a shopping plaza with nice glass furniture, glass doors all the way around. It's really quite amazing. But once you pass that and then start back there, there's a huge big tree on that part of the Parikram path that bats live in. And those of you that are into seeing bats, you can go there in the early morning and there's hundreds and hundreds of bats that stay in that tree. But instead of making that right to take the Parikram Marg, if you make a left, it's a very nice dusty dirt road. And this takes you back into the farming area of Vrindavan and into the pastures and into the areas where the gardens are. They grow all the flowers. And it's just a dirt road. There's actually no pavement. It's one of the very few places left in Vrindavan you can go barefoot and actually feel the wonder of that Brajrenu. Brajrenu means the dust of Vrindavan. And so you go back a fair distance, and there's a small little village. And in that village, located right on the bank of where the Jamuna used to flow, is the ashram of Subhara Muni. The Subhara Muni ashram is run by Ram Bhaktas. Very, very, very nice there. Every morning, the main mahant at the place sits and has a fire jaga he does. I got some real nice pictures of him doing. And throws his offering into there. It's a nice little Agnihotra there. And they welcome us every year. I don't know how they welcome 400 people into their ashram, but they manage. And this is right where the Jamuna River used to run and where Subhara Muni was doing his austerities underwater. And then, of course, we know what happened. He witnessed the fish engaged in their activities that all living entities engage in and eventually decided, yeah, I want some of that too. So he left the Jamuna River, and went to marry went to a king to ask for the opportunity to marry his daughter. It turned out to be daughters. However, most young girls, when it's time for marriage, they're not looking at some yogi who's got old wrinkled skin and a big long beard as their ideal husband. Wouldn't that be right, ladies? Probably something else in mind. So at any rate, Subhar Muni was able to change his appearance. He married 50 wives and spent a considerable amount of time engaged in the household affairs. After some time, he realized the futility of this and then again resumed austerities. Now, the place he assumed these austerities is just down the road a little bit further. It's called Ramtal. And Ramtal is a very, very beautiful place. There was a bathing pond there. And it had been deserted for decades and decades and decades. So recently there was some renovation work being put on by one very wonderful foundation in Brudge that's going around to different holy places and fixing them up very nicely. And they began to dig this place out. And as they dug down, they came across these series of walls that had copper plates mounted on the walls. These were all under the ground. And the inscriptions, all these copper plates had inscriptions on them. And the inscriptions indicated that this was the place of Subhar Muni's austerities after he left the household life. He went to this place. And so they've pulled all that together and fixed it up very nicely, brought the copper plates up and presented them, cleaned them up, and they're all mounted there. You can go and see them. And it's a very, very peaceful, quiet place. So many flowering trees and bushes and one huge banyan tree. The banyan tree, I'm going to say the trunk of this banyan tree is the size of that entire open area right there in the temple. Gigantic. Very huge. And in this banyan tree are many, many snakes. Many, many snakes are up there. So if you go to hug that banyan tree, as many people hug the banyan trees, you have to be a little bit careful. But this area, Subhar Muni's original ashram, and then this Ramtal where he went later, have that mood of old Vrindavan. They've got that very peaceful and quiet mood. And there are places like that around Braj Mandala. So you can have that opportunity to see, oh, this is what it was like, and get a vision within your mind of what you're looking for when you go back to the other parts of Vrindavan that may be a bit more developed. So I just, all these things were brought to my memory as I saw this verse here about treating our diseased eyes with a proper ointment so that we can see everything. So these are just some thoughts on these verses and a few stories from Vrindavan. It's 10:02. The kids are leaving. We'll finish here and ask if there's any questions, any comments, corrections. Nothing? Well, as 3/4 of our class, oh, we have a question in the back here. Janmasthami Prabhu, what's up? It's nice to see that the kids clean up everything when they leave. That's good training. It means their teachers have taught them well, their parents have taught them well. Pick it all up.
Nice class, Prabhu. In the Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, there's a description how in Kali Yuga, as the age progresses, the Shakti of Sridhar Mayapur increases, whereas the Maya covering of the other dhams increases. So what you're describing, I remember when I first went to Vrindavan in 81, and what it's like now, it's like just a completely different place. They had a few auto rickshaws, but mostly tungas, and now it's like traffic jams every weekend.
Well, what to speak of those of us that were fortunate enough to go in 73, 74. I mean, we remember a Vrindavan that doesn't exist anymore. This is a common conversation also, you know, that the, you know, there was a handful of us, older ones, that could appreciate what Vrindavan used to be like, you know. But here again, if that's all we're seeing of Vrindavan is that external vision, although one external vision may be more conducive for enlightening our, you know, pursuit of devotional mood, either one of them have to be given up and we have to see a pure vision of Vrindavan. So this is where this verse, these handful of verses, as far as purifying our heart and purifying our vision have to come into play. And it's something we have to do. We may say, okay, well, I'm not going to Vrindavan. I don't really like India, so I'm not going to be going. That's fine. We still have to do this, regardless of whether we're doing it for the purpose of properly seeing the Dham or whether we're doing it for the purpose of properly executing our devotional service. the removal of the impurities in our heart, the removal of the impurities in our vision, so that we can see things as they spiritually are, has to be a desire, has to be a drive in our devotional service. If we don't have that, then we should consider ourselves most unfortunate. We should find out where it is so we can get it. Reminds me, there's this one letter, Srila Prabhupada, very early. The devotee was writing and asking so many questions, and what about this, and what about this? Like 20 or 30 questions, and Prabhupada was answering, and, you know, simple little answers. And at the end of it, Prabhupada said, the bottom line is, use your common sense, and if you don't have any, find someone that does. So if we don't have that desire to purify our hearts, to purify our vision, quickly find someone that does and attach ourselves to them. Because then we might get a taste for that, and we might get that association which will help us want to do that. It's a necessity of going back to home, back to Godhead. How else is it that we become Krishna's heart? If we're not purified, well, first of all, if we're not purified, we're not going back to home, back to Godhead. But second of all, if we're not purified, Krishna's not going to place us in his heart. And that's what this verse is saying, that when the devotee becomes pure like that, he becomes the heart of the personality of Godhead. So we have some work to do. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.